extract.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
The co-host is Nick Redfern. Joining us this week, we have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men. And we're discussing UFOs and disinformation because that seems to be such a big factor of what's happening in the UFO field. I'm Gene Steinberg. We're in the Paracast all together trying to figure it out, find the signal from the noise. And that's an important part here of one of our mottos for the Paracast is separating signal from noise. And a lot of this is noise. So how do we find the real UFOs from the espionage, the psychological warfare, all these crazy games? Where do we find the real stuff?
That's the $50 billion question. And I think, you know, one of the purposes of all the disinformation that is pumped into the field, both, I think, by the various military and intelligence organizations over the years and perhaps unwittingly or perhaps occasionally deliberately by people within the UFO community itself is to create, I think, this kind of fog of confusion so that picking the signal from the noise just becomes incredibly difficult. And one of the historical stories I found that I thought related nicely to this was back in the early 50s when radio signals from Russia were so being picked up by overflight by aircraft and later by satellites. Each small town would actually have sort of teams of people hired to kind of make noise through transmitters, and so they'd have whistles and pipes and ratchets and horns and use their voices. And the idea was to sort of drown out any other signals that were being either picked up by being broadcast by radio transmitters from Europe or could be picked up by receivers from the rest of Europe as well. So this idea of sort of generating noise to confuse a signal is intrinsic to the role of disinformation. That's sort of what disinformation is. That's what it says. But I think, yes, so that's really the key. And with the book, what I really wanted to sort of try to do is pick up the threads of the signal so that we can whittle away the noise and the distraction and, you know, the fighting and the arguing and the kind of chaff. And try to kind of get down to the real phenomenon itself and try to make sense of that. And it's quite amazing as Rick Doty said to us when talking about his involvement with Paul Venowitz, you really don't need to do very much to create a lot of noise in the UFO field. And I think, you know, a lot of the work that the Air Force Office of Special Investigations and Special Projects teams in the 80s were doing was just, you know, dropping little tidbits of data and information into the pool and seeing them team and multiply like things under a microscope, to misquote H.G. Wells at the beginning of War of the Worlds.
Okay, well, I think I'm interested in Richard Doty because we tried a couple of times early on in the history of the Paracast to get the guy on because it seemed like he'd have a lot of interesting stories to tell, but having spent time with him, is he someone who actually worked with the official sanction of the government to provide UFO disinformation, or is he, as they say, an independent actor?
I would say my sense is that some of what he did was unquestionably part of his role. Was, you know, he was employed to do that. I think he certainly was tasked with talking to people like Paul Benowitz, certainly, and Bill Moore. It's possible that at other times he sort of drifted out of off beam and so conducted his own operations. I don't know. I can't speculate on that. I can speculate, but I can't say anything for certain. But certainly his work with Benowitz, and I would guess later with Linda Malton Howe was was officially sanctioned, and in the book I sort of try to trace that chain of command up via his superior Colonel Richard Weaver, and then up to Barry Hennessy, who headed special projects and was sort of responsible for the PJ sort of PJ with special projects, and he was. One of his roles was to protect kind of new technologies and new Air Force developments. So I think one thing that's interesting, if you kind of place the timeline of the Benowitz affair and the kind of real focus on pumping disinformation into the UFO community and the development of the stealth program, is they're kind of, they're, you know, pretty close match. So I suspect that was really what was at the main focus of this program, was to mask the stealth program.
What about this Project Serpo episode that came more recently? Is that one of Doty's shenanigans or what?
Well, nobody at this point, what, now 5 years down the line, I don't think anyone really clearly knows what exactly was going on with the Serpo story, which, as a friend pointed out to me, recently is an anagram of prose, which I thought was quite nice. But certainly Doty was involved at some level with promoting the Serpo material. Certainly he was kind of chaperoning Bill Ryan to some extent at the last Lynn UFO conference in 2006 when Bill was the kind of keynote speaker and was talking about the Serpo material, and it was Bill who had kind of taken on the mantle of being the mouthpiece for Serpo in late 2005 and early 2006. And Rick was certainly taking a very keen interest in Bill and of what he had to say. And later on, a British investigator and an uncle, Stephen Broadbent, who runs the Reality Uncovered site, he actually sort of semi-accidentally was able to demonstrate that Doty had used multiple false emails to promote the Serpo story, and each one would sort of corroborate the accounts of the previous one. And this, while it doesn't to prove that Rick was behind it, it certainly demonstrates that he was involved with the story. I don't think that any one person, and certainly not Rick, would be capable of sort of generating all the Serpo material by themselves in a short period of time. There's just mountains and mountains and tens of thousands of words of material. But I think it's quite possible, certainly, that Rick had a role to play in that story. But Rick always denied it, and you know, we can't take it any further than that. I wonder if at some point we'll hear the full story. But I think if you look at the Serpo material for what it is, which is, you know, a piece of text, then there's nothing in there that somebody who was well versed in the UFO story in UFO culture and UFO history couldn't piece together for themselves. And you know, the science is apparently, I'm not an astronomer, but the astronomy was quite hokey, and yeah, there was certainly some rough edges to what was put out there. I couldn't help noticing that the date that the Serpo Noughts, which was the name given to the Air Force personnel who were going to be sent out to the planet Sinu, their return date was actually coincided with the release of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and at the end of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Steven Spielberg's excellent sort of hymn to the UFO story.
Okay, well, we'll get into that in the next section, okay. But maybe that's kind of an inside joke. We'll have
exactly.
To see. Sure.
Yes.
We have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. Our co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in.
Say it loud, the Paracast. Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, September 24th, 2010. Gold opened this morning at $12.99.70. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $13.33.85, $6.66.93 for a half ounce, or $3.33.46 for a quarter ounce. That's $13.33.85, $6.66.93, or $3.33.46.
Again, the Congressional Budget Office sounds the alarm, warning of Greek-style U.S. debt crises. CBO is drawing a parallel between U.S. economy and the Greek economic meltdown. Debt to GDP climbing to unfamiliar territory and deficits rising to unsupportable levels. Hi, Ted Anderson. The Federal Debt and Risk of Financial Crises document the CBO has published is a must-read for every American. Covering the risks of deficit spending, aging population, and rising interest rates spells economic disaster. Call today at 800-686-2237. I'll send it free. Again, call 800-686-2237. Ask for the CBO document. Call 800-686-2237.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
As gardeners, we can all relate.
What do you do with all of the excess food that you grow?
Freezing or canning may have been the process you've used, but the good folks at Excalibur Dehydrator have a healthy alternative to preserve the fruits of your labor. The Excalibur Dehydrator will help you preserve your fruits and vegetables quickly and easily, so you don't have to worry about premature spoiling. You can also use your Excalibur Dehydrator year-round to make delicious jerky. And the best part? The foods you dehydrate are free from excess additives, salt, and preservatives, and that's something we can all do without. To learn more and to order your very own Excalibur Dehydrator, visit drying123.com and see how the Excalibur Dehydrator can help you preserve your favorite foods.
Mention coupon code GCN and receive a free book on how to preserve your foods.
Again, that's drying123.com, drying123.com, or call 1-800-875-4254. That's 1-800-875-4254 today.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
It's good stuff.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Genesis.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you want to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out on iTunes.
We have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men. Nick Redfern is the co-host who says it loud. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Nick, pick up on the questioning, please.
Yeah, I mean, one of the areas, Mark, that I'm particularly interesting that you delved into quite deeply, and hopefully you can talk about the people you interviewed in your theories and conclusions was relative to cattle mutilations. Now, of course, like certain aspects of the UFO phenomenon, this has been linked as much with UFOs as it has with, you know, military tests and biological warfare. I just wondered, you know, how you kind of stand on this issue based on who you've spoken to and the kind of conclusions you reached.
John and I spoke to, on two occasions actually, we met Gabe Valdez, who, thanks to Greg Bishop, who introduced us to him. And Gabe was, I think he's a state trooper, so I'm not so sure he's a state trooper around Dulce in the mid-70s. And became sort of quite embroiled in the sort of ongoing series of apparent caste mutilations at that time. And Gabe was absolutely convinced that there was some kind of covert operation going on that involved tagging cattle with ultraviolet paint, then perhaps flying over the area with some kind of aircraft. And to our sort of surprise, Gabe described two sets of aircraft. One was helicopters and one were what he said were some kind of sort of strange, perhaps flying saucer-style craft, but flying over the area, probably with a helicopter, picking out the marked cattle and hauling them probably up onto the top of the Archuleta Mesa outside Dulce, New Mexico, where they had a laboratory to sort of operate on them. And one of the sort of interesting things when I sort of first started looking into this, I spoke to a friend of mine who worked for the UK Food Standards Agency, and I was telling him about the fact that the parts of the animal that were removed, so the tongue, the lips, the sexual organs and the anus, he immediately said, oh, well, that's what you'd take out if you were looking for some kind of sort of transmission of a virus or some kind of poisoning or a sort of infection, and those are the parts that aren't allowed into the food chain. So it does sort of suggested to me some kind of sort of research project, and certainly I'm not the only person to have said this. I think a guy called Ted Oliphant, I remember some years ago writing about this, researching it, and more recently Colm Kelleher in a really interesting book called Brain Trust, which talks about the possibility that this, what was being monitored, was the spread of prions involved in passing on what appears in humans as Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, mad cow disease. And another possibility is that it was looking, I think another possibility is that it was looking at radiation seepage from a project to use an atomic blast to kind of core out natural gas from the area, called Project Gas Buggy, from the late 60s, and actually this sort of backfired, and all it did was contaminate the groundwater in the area with radiation. And this is another possibility, that this is what the research was being conducted into. Now, one thing that I'm surprised no one's really picked up on in the book, which I was quite surprised and sort of pleased to discover, was the sort of legendary technological sort of bête noire of the conspiracy world, the silent helicopter, which was always fingered as being involved in cattle mutilation operations all over the U.S. throughout the 70s and through the 80s and to the present day, is not a myth, is a real aircraft, and was one that was developed in the late 60s and then flown by the CIA on two missions in Vietnam, and it was called the Hughes 500P, and P stood for penetrator. And people on the ground who heard this thing and saw it flying over their heads said it was a very unnerving experience, because you'd see this thing flying past, but all you would hear is the sound of an aircraft very far in the distance, and it was just a real kind of disjunction, a moment of real sort of cognitive disjunction, where you could see something and you knew what you should hear, but you couldn't hear it. And I was intrigued that Gabe Valdez described one night when he and his team were out sort of snooping, trying to see the news fighters in action. They described a well-lit kind of aircraft flying over their heads, making a put-put-put sound. And it was there was this a ring of circular lights shining down at them, and that was all they could see. And I wondered if this was indeed one of the Hughes penetrators sort of being deployed in this area. And it's interesting, people who've tried to follow the paper trail for these helicopters, they were deployed into Vietnam. I think it was 1970 that they flew two missions, and one of them crashed in a sort of test flight. And the other was flown back to Edwards Air Force Base in, I think, 1971 or perhaps 1972, and then sort of disappears underground. But it's quite possible, I would suggest, that they reappeared sort of later in the 1970s, involved with whatever was going on around Dulce, New Mexico, and elsewhere as part of this very puzzling cattle mutilation phenomenon. But one thing, a word of caution is, I would say, is that once, you know, stories did start spreading about the cattle mutilations within the ranching community, I think, you know, I would imagine that there was a lot of fear and panic, and I would guess, I should state, that a lot of what was reported as cattle mutilations probably, you know, quite likely, as vets and animal pathologists at the time said, a lot of them probably were mundane animal attacks or predator attacks, that in the climate of fear were kind of misread as the mutilations that we now know about.
Okay, well, that raises a big question here, which maybe we'll start exploring also in the next section, which is the motivations behind disinformation. We want people to believe there are hybrid aliens. We want people to believe perhaps there were MJ-12 documents back in the 1980s, Dulce, New Mexico, all this stuff. To what end? Is there an end game? Why do they play these pranks?
I think there are multiple reasons, and the reasons change over time and are sort of dependent on the particular operation that's at hand. So I think when it's expedient to do so, they'll pull UFOs out of the dressing up box, and at other times they'll use, you know, all sorts of other folkloric and supernatural creatures, as I talk about in the book, and we can talk about that after the break.
And a quick reminder, neighbors, next week on the PowerCast, Nick Redfern returns as a guest to talk about his new book, Final Events. The co-host will be Chris O'Brien. But that is then, this is now. We'll look into the psychological warfare toolbox in our next segment with Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men. The co-host is Nicholas Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the PowerCast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaway, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
It's the end of summer blowout sale at HerbalHealer.com.
Now take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on colloidal silver.
500 parts per million, pharmaceutical grade.
All sizes from 2 ounces to a gallon on sale.
It's simply the best colloidal silver available.
And CoQ10 100 milligrams with hawthorn.
An exceptional supplement for heart and arterial health.
Is only $19.
Plus, get the number one arthritis supplement, glucosamine chondroitin.
60 caps for only $12.
Where?
HerbalHealer.com.
Super Femplex and Super Maleplex, both great formulas for reproductive tonification, are on sale now, 90 tabs, only $15. Need a safe and mild colon detoxifier? Herbal Healer Academy's Colon Enhancer Large 250 capsule bottle is now only $18. There's so much more at herbalhealer.com, but not much time. The end of summer blowout sale ends October 13th. New customers get a free catalog with your first order. Log on and hit the summer special now at herbalhealer.com.
There are all sorts of things on the market designed to keep you safe when you're out and about. Whistles, mace, you name it. But for real peace of mind for parents, students, and children, you need an iSafe bag.
We heard a loud noise, and I could see a flashing in the backpack.
The sound was different than a car alarm, so it was a different sound, so we looked to see what it was.
I think it's a great idea.
Introducing the iSafe bag, a backpack that looks normal until you pull the pin. The iSafe bag emits two powerful sirens and a high-intensity strobe light simultaneously to attract immediate help.
Having the iSafe bag gives me a feeling of being safe because I know when I pull the alarm, people will hear it and they'll come and help me.
For mobile personal security, get the iSafe bag at iSafeBags.com. That's the letter iSafeBags.com. iSafeBags.com.
I thank God that she had that backpack and she had enough sense to use it.
It's like having a bodyguard with you all the time. The iSafe bag, the patented bag with a built-in alarm, available at iSafeBags.com.
You've got your gold, water filters, and storable food. Now for complete self-sufficiency, make your own fuel with Revenor.com. Don't laugh. A quality still from Revenor.com and our free book included with every still is all you need to beat the high cost of gas and stop dependence on foreign oil. Find out how easy it is to legally make your own alcohol fuel at R-E-V-E-N-O-O-R.com. Or call 503-662-4173. Revenor.com. Find quality alcohol stills.
Did somebody say stills? That's how Grandpappy made his own sour mash, and you can too. Revenor stills can be used to make brandies, liquors, whiskey, vodka, and more, all perfectly legal with a permit. You should check into having your own Revenor still at Revenor.com. That's R-E-V-E-N-O-O-R.com. Or call 503-662-4173. 1-year warranty on all stills from Revenor.com. Fine quality alcohol stills.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio.
You guys are awesome.
I love this station. I really do.
GCN.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what. You're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
We have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. The co-host, Nick Redfern, I'm Gene Steinberg, you're in the Paracast, and we're looking at the motivations. So one reason maybe you would do this sort of thing, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, is to divert your attention from something that's really going on. So you draw attention to some kind of crazy, wacky event, fate, but they're doing something else. So is that what we're looking for, what the something else might be?
Yes, I think largely that's part of it. You know, it's a classic stage magician's trick to, you know, hold his finger out in one direction. Everyone goes off to see what he's doing, and with the other, he's, I don't know, sort of stuffing a rabbit under a table or whatever it would be. But yes, so that kind of distraction certainly is part of it. And if we go back to the mid-1950s, and when the Project Blue Book, the official Air Force investigation into the UFO phenomenon, was sort of at its height, it's now so well known that at certain times, the investigators for Blue Book were doing was not looking at genuinely sort of investigating people's UFO sightings. They were actually monitoring the visibility of the newly developed U-2 aircraft as it flew over built-up areas. And there's a lot of controversy about this statement, which occurs in an internal CIA history about UFOs by a man called Gerald Haynes, but certainly on some occasions this was what was being done. So the Air Force personnel would turn up and meet Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, who would say, yes, we saw this very strange thing glinting in the sunlight, moving in a straight line, and we, you know, really didn't know what it was, and we were worried it might be an alien craft, or it could be the Russians, we just don't know. And the Air Force guys would say, don't worry, Mrs. Johnson, what you saw was the planet Venus, or it was a stray weather balloon, or it was, you know, nothing at all, just a mote in your eye. Full well knowing that actually what they'd seen was the U-2, and this would be useful for them when considering, you know, how people would, how and whether people would see the U-2 as it flew over the Soviet Union, which is what it was tasked to do. And part of the reason with this was in its first 2 years, the U-2 was actually, as most aircraft were, painted a futuristic, well, wasn't painted at all, it was a futuristic, so metallic, shiny metallic silver, which at sunset and sunrise would catch the sun and reflect very brightly and draw attention to itself. And later on it was sort of a more somber, sober gunmetal grey. So that was one aspect, was sort of, yes, diverting attention from your real toys and your real technologies. And I think that's certainly also part of the Benowitz story, was to mask the stealth development of the stealth program and to probably, I would guess, to point people out to places like Dulce, New Mexico, where Paul Benowitz was encouraged to believe there was a lot of UFO activity going on and even an alien base, while, you know, certainly by the early to mid-80s, the test flights and of the stealth fighter and later the bomber were going on at places like Area 51 and Tonopah and next door. So, yes, it's a kind of, you know, look over here, look in this direction, there's an amazing underground alien base, and ignore what's going on over in this direction, where the strange, ungainly, arrowhead-shaped aircraft is coming into land. But there are multiple other, you know, there are many other reasons. I think one of them, and if we look at the CIA's so the 1953 Robertson panel, where they sort of officially enter the UFO story, and they sort of talk about the issues that the UFO kind of panic raises. One of the things they talk about is the need to monitor UFO groups and also to sort of control them and to get the UFO community sort of into one place and to get them sort of organized so that they're easier to watch, so to keep tabs on.
And when you say that about being in the business of watching over UFO groups, can we then become paranoid enough to say that maybe one or more of the members or people who are officers in some of these UFO groups are really engaged in overt disinformation, they're working for the authorities?
It's the sort of statement that's often bandied around. I mean, if you look back to NICAP,
Major Donald Kehoe.
Donald Kehoe, sorry. I got distracted. My screen turned off as I was thinking. Yes, Major Donald Kehoe. You know, we see a lot of former CIA. You have Roscoe Hillen Carter, who was a Navy man who then ran the CIA and then ended up very senior in NICAP, and there are others in there as well. And everyone who's a newbie seal said they were genuinely interested in the subject and in the phenomenon, but it's very hard to kind of separate people's lifelong involvement in the intelligence and military arena with the fact that just a few years before, the CIA had been telling its people to get involved in the UFO field and in the UFO business. And there are obvious reasons for this, and for people, for the intelligence organizations to send their officers into the field, because, it's often going to be the case that what UFO hunters and people looking for UFOs, especially when they're congregating around Air Force bases areas where they're not supposed to be, it'd be very easy for agents of unfriendly powers to kind of get involved in this in these communities and pick up tidbits of information that, when pieced with other bits of information that perhaps the UFO community doesn't have, could reveal quite a lot. of technical intelligence about new weapons development.
One of the concerns of NICAP that I had is if you're going to have an organization top-heavy with military people as they were, at least as far as the board was concerned. Mm-hmm. Even Richard Hall was in, I think, the Air Force or something before he came into civilian life. Wouldn't that be too obvious? I mean, how can you believe that they would be so transparent? You look at NICAP and you say, well, it's got to be a military front because you got Major Donald Kehoe and all his buddies from the Air Force, from the CIA, from the Marines, from the Navy, et cetera, et cetera. Isn't that just too darn obvious?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a case of hiding in plain sight, or it could be. I'm prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt, and like you say, Kehoe, you know, wanted NICAP to be a serious organization, to be a serious force, and it would have made sense to him to pull his, you know, his buddies and people he knew who were serious players in, you know, in the military. Military organizations to take part in this. And the other interesting character, though, again, given the Robertson panel's conclusions, you have Colonel Joseph Bryan, who is actually the very first CIA chief of political and psychological warfare, and he was a senior player in NICAP. And curiously enough, actually, his son was C.B.D. Bryan, who wrote Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind about in the mid-90s about the abduction story. And he's actually gone on the record as saying that his dad was just genuinely fascinated with the UFO story and certainly wasn't involved on any kind of professional level. But as they say, once a spook, always a spook, and there's always going to be a time when you're asked to pass on information about what you're doing, if it's useful, and if you're still in good contact with your former employers. And
they call you back into the game like they do on television. Yep. We have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Man. The co-host is Nicholas Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey, neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
If you're in a service business, that's money ringing in your ears. If your phone's not ringing, chances are it's a problem with your marketing. Landscapers, painters, roofers, carpet cleaners, pet sitters, handymen. Anyone with a residential service business can build a huge and loyal customer base fast with the Magic Yellow Flyer. No more expensive newspaper, yellow pages, or internet pay-per-click ads. The Magic Yellow Flyer will have new customers calling you within 1 week. The Magic Yellow Flyer marketing system is the most effective and inexpensive way to build a referral-only service business in a short period of time. And the Magic Yellow Flyer comes with an outrageous one-year guarantee. You will get new customers or your money back. For details, go to MagicYellowFlyer.com. No matter what business you're in, the Magic Yellow Flyer marketing system will work for you. Visit MagicYellowFlyer.com. Put the Magic Yellow Flyer to work for you today. Visit MagicYellowFlyer.com.
Can you live with minor aches and pains? Maybe. But oftentimes, those won't-go-away pains become so debilitating that we are not able to do things we used to, like go for a walk, garden, or even button a shirt. Now restore normal function naturally and give yourself the freedom to move with Recovery Extra Strength. Over-the-counter drugs will stop the pain, but at the expense of your liver. Recovery Extra Strength is the number one solution for pain and inflammation. It contains Nutricol, a unique proprietary blend of green tea and grapes, and is made in Canada under strict Health Canada oversight of natural products. If you suffer from arthritis, bursitis, tendonitis, back, or other aches and pains, use Recovery Extra Strength. Call 866-543-3388 or go to RemarkableRecovery.com. Get free shipping on orders of $50 or more when you use checkout code GCN Radio. Call 1-866-543-3388 or go to RemarkableRecovery.com for Recovery Extra Strength for pain-free mobility.
What is a wind generator?
How can the wind produce power for a small cabin?
How can wind energy be stored and used during an emergency?
Can I assemble my own wind generator?
For answers to questions about wind power, visit windbluepower.com. Did you know the wind could provide your family with emergency power? It can with a wind generator from windbluepower.com. Learn how our amazing LifeBreeze wind generator kits start charging a 12-volt battery and just 6 mile per hour wind. Or see the new Cyclone X2 dual kit featuring two wind generators on just one tower. And learn why schools and universities across the country utilize our products to teach about wind power and alternative energy at windbluepower.com. All kits qualify for a 30% IRS tax credit for residential energy efficient property. Enter coupon code RADIO for a 5% discount at windbluepower.com. That's windbluepower.com or call 800-976-0026. That's 800-976-0026.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
I'm told that it has everything.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
What's going to happen next?
We have Mark Pilkington. The book is Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. The co-host is Nicholas Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're still in the PowerCast. So the logical question here, is there an organization, a specific organization of these Mirage Men, or is it just a bunch of different agencies, different people, depending on the case and the needs?
My sense is that it's B. I think this is something that's kind of pulled together as and when it's the right thing to do. Perhaps there are certain people who are sort of better informed and more interested in the wider UFO field, and they get, maybe they get called on for their expertise and their knowledge. And it's worth remembering that back in 1980, when William Moore, author of the Roswell incident, got involved with the Air Force Office of Special Investigation and Rick Doty, his role was to provide them with intelligence on what the current hot topics and sort of stories of interest and the current sort of directions of research in the UFO field were. And, they really, really lent on him heavily for information. So it's not as if they knew themselves what, it's not as if they'd been keeping close tabs on the UFO community. So I think they probably do these days. I think they scour the internet, I would guess, if they need information. And I was recently chatting to Lee Nicholson, who runs the Open Mind Forum, who says that there's a constant stream of intelligence servers kind of pointed in their direction of people who may well just have an interest in the material and at other times might be, fishing for new schemes and new ideas for deceptions. But, I think the UFO story is a useful one, and it's a perpetually useful one that is as much of a headache for the Air Force and for the intelligence services as it is a useful cover. And one of the things I tried to do in the book was each time I sort of brought in a reference to what I was sort of trying to suggest could have been a deception operation within the UFO arena, was trying to bring in an analogous example from outside. So, for other instances where either supernatural or esoteric or folkloric sort of ideas and concepts had been deployed in intelligence operations. And I think, you know, what I was trying to show is that it's not all about UFOs. UFOs are just one of the things that can be pulled up out of the dressing up box when it's useful to do so. We mentioned Leon Davidson earlier, and one of the things he seemed to believe that there was much more of a focused kind of UFO themed operation going on, and he thought much of it was to do with the CIA, even to the extent of some of George Adamski's sort of secondary contacts, where he'd be driven out into the desert in a black stretch Buick, I think it was, and sort of given strange drinks and made to watch films of traveling through space. Davidson suggested that these were kind of intelligence sort of theme park rides being set up for Adamski's benefit, and he also suggested that there was a deliberate, in the style of Bernard Newman's The Flying Saucer, which we talked about earlier, that there was a deliberate sort of program to spread the idea that humanoid extraterrestrials, very similar to the ones in the day the Earth stood still, were visiting Earth. And I think you can sort of understand you can understand Davidson's thinking about this, and you can also understand why someone like Alan Dulles, who is a very, you know, thoughtful and engaged man, might see this as useful. At the end of World War II, which was, you know, only sort of 5 to 7 years in the past, depending when we're looking at, there was a real fear, I think, that America and the sort of allied nations might lose their faith in God and become a kind of morally bankrupt, sort of drifting nation of sort of nihilists, because you know, what God could possibly have allowed the horrors of World War II to take place.
You mentioned George Adamski, so the implication here is that Adamski was not someone who just made it all up, but he was a victim of some kind of government intervention. Is that what you're suggesting here? That's, of course, what possibly Dr. Davidson was suggesting.
That's certainly what Davidson was suggesting, yes. And I'm sure Nick has something to say on this, because I actually used some of his research in telling this part of the story.
Well, the reason I want to mention this, and this is something that may be ahead of what Nick might want to say, and that is, I knew another contactee, Howard Menger.
Oh, yeah.
He had the same statement. You know, I remember this lunch that Jim Moseley and I had with Howard Menger many years ago. And Menger said, you know, I think I was part of some sort of government experiment. Uh-huh. So are we tying that into the same source?
Yes. It's funny you should say that, because I spoke to, Timothy Green Beckley, who's based in New York, I think. And
right. And we all forget Tim Beckley. You know, we always forget his name. But I've known Tim Beckley since we were both kids, so it goes back a long time.
And I actually was in contact with Beckley, because he, like you, was involved with Menger, and I asked him about this rumor that Howard had admitted that he thought he was part of a, you know, some kind of intelligence project. And Beckley, he wasn't really so prepared to go on the record about that, so I actually didn't use that story in the book, but I thought,
yeah, but you know what? Menger said that to me, and he said that to Jim Moseley, and we sat there, and that's what his position was.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible. But Nick, sorry, you were going to say something.
Nick, you want to amplify that at all? Because you, having written a book about contactees, this encroaches on your territory, which we're happy to do, so maybe you can contribute something.
Yeah, I mean, there's two important points worth noting. One is the fact that, you know, the contactees were watched very closely by the FBI and other agencies in the 50s. We know that because the files have surfaced through the Freedom of Information Act, primarily from the FBI. Adamski's FBI file is about 80 pages. George Van Tassel's is just under 400 and spans 13 years. And it's quite clear from some of the internal references that the concern was that some of the contactees were talking about scenarios that were sort of pushing communism, the idea that the aliens were communist or socialist and
You know, and I think the fact that the penny dropped, if you like, in the FBI and different agencies, that hang on, you know, these people are lecturing to thousands of people out at Giant Rock. They're selling, like in Adamski's case, Flying Saucers Have Landed, literally thousands and thousands of copies of a book, and they're saying that communist aliens are the future of the world. You can well understand why someone may want to engage in some sort of psyop to either discredit them or perhaps, as Mark points out, you know, actually fabricate incidents to drive them away from that communist political angle and more down a more of a conventional UFO path. Now, another person who we know this was done to, well, I think it was done to, and I wrote about in Contactees, was Orfeo Angelucci, who had these various experiences allegedly in the late 40s and early 50s of a classic contactee style. But in his follow-up book to his initial one, he talked about how he met this man who he names in the book Adam, who wanted to talk to him about UFO experiences. And Adam said, you know, we should meet at this diner out in the desert, the California desert, which is sort of classic contactee territory, you know, diners in the desert. And Angelucci went there, and this guy Adam said, you know, let's sit down, have lunch or dinner, whatever the time of the day it was. And Adam basically said words to the effect of, before I can tell you about my experiences, you need to swallow this pill. And, you know, Angelucci, whether being gullible, an idiot or whatever, you know, he just went ahead and swallowed a pill given to him by a complete stranger. And nothing happened for about 30 minutes. After that time, however, he began to feel a little bit unusual, and he said that the room itself and the furniture seemed to take on like some sort of ethereal meaning, and colors danced around the room, and the glass on the table shimmered in a strange light. It was almost like he'd been put under an LSD trip or something.
I was
like
thinking that.
That
maybe Adam was really Timothy Leary in disguise, but before we get into that.
It could have been. What happened was that Angelucci ended up spilling his guts to Adam about his experiences.
And we'll have to get into that. That opens up the can of worms that we want to get into in a moment. We'll get into that can of worms. We have Nick Redfern as our co-host. Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, joins us. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi. This is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.